Welcome to the Three Down Nation podcast, where I'm joined by a couple of indoor cats. Fellas, I caught you guys last week on the Three Down Nation podcast that was mega in size and had a lot of information, but complaining about sight lines at past combines. JC was out here talking about bad sources. Like, what happened to you two? I leave for a couple weeks and you go baby soft. What's going on?
Well, you call this a couple of indoor cats, and going out in the outdoors to cover a combine in the freezing cold, I guess. Yeah, maybe the West Coast softy rubbed off on me a little bit.
Oh, JC, what do you have to say for yourself?
Hey, I would be pretty grizzled if I had to endure Winnipeg, both visually and weather-wise, all the time like Hodge. So hopefully I could give him a little warming up in a number of levels.
Hodge has navigated this deep freeze of a winter in Manitoba with a bald head, JC.
I don't know how he does it. Well, I mean, the toques, probably.
It's the toques.
The do-rags, yeah. Or whatever.
Are they
he's toques, got
though,
on.
Or are they more like beanie caps?
I own them all. I got toques. I got beanies. I got thin, like, netted ones. I have do-rags. I have everything. And it's a constant... it's a constant buffet for me, really, of headwear. I will also say we're going up to 15 this weekend, JC. So you just missed out on the good weather. We're actually getting a real spring here soon in the province of Manitoba.
That's,
I can't wait.
That's actually better than it is outside right now in BC. So,
oh, sorry, can you say that again? I didn't hear that actually. Can you say it again? say it one more time. I didn't hear.
How'd you need a Three Down Nation bandana? But in all seriousness. You guys did a wonderful job of covering the CFL Combine. Your detail and preparation and commitment to covering these Canadian prospects is, dare I say, second to none, other than our well-respected colleague, Dwayne Ford, mm-hmm. at TSN. So kudos to you. There was a lot of great information in that podcast, as much as we're just having a little bit of fun and joking around for those who want to partake and not complain about us, you know. Laughing from time to time.
We have fun here. That's the point. It's sports media. Let's have some fun.
All right, boys. Today, we're discussing an exciting pro day for a pair of University of British Columbia offensive linemen.
Football Canada making a new executive hire.
Touchdown Pacific selling out in record time.
Samuel Himelis inking a new contract extension with the Riders.
The passing of legendary CFL executive Jim Hobson. But first,
the Saskatchewan Roughriders have added Canadian receiver Chase Claypool to the team's negotiation list, which gives the Riders his exclusive CFL rights. The 2020 second round NFL draft pick is currently a free agent down south. Could Mapletron ever come to the CFL?
I had a couple of people describe his chances to me of coming to the Canadian Football League as minimal or next to none, and I think that's where they ultimately stand. Guys, I got to be honest, when I saw a tweet, I forget the exact account, but from an NFL-focused X or Twitter account, I actually thought, you know, I should probably check on this. But then I was like, no, because sometimes when I do that, I get laughed at by the people I check with within the league. But sure enough, it turns out the Rough Riders actually added Claypool to the neg list. For the uninitiated, it's not the first time Claypool's name has been on a CFL negotiation list. Ed Hervey, when he was the GM of the BC Lions, put Claypool on. Actually, I believe it was just after he got drafted mm-hmm. into the NFL by the Pittsburgh Steelers for a little while. So I think a couple of the biggest things to understand here is names come on and off the list all the time. Sometimes teams do it for reasons just to get their brand out there. Now, if anyone Googles Chase Claypool, there's a chance the Rough Riders logo comes out there, so it could potentially get viewed. And other times they do it because, you know, even if there's a long shot chance that a player could come up here, a la, let's say, a Johnny Manziel, no one ever thought that would happen. He was a first-round NFL draft pick. That you hold on to his rights, though it does take up one of the 45 spots on your exclusive negotiation list. So we'll see how long this lasts. Three Down Nation will definitely monitor to see if Claypool is on this Rough Riders neg list for the long term.
I know JC is going to talk about Chase Claypool's harrowing NFL career. So I will use my time here to talk about how unbelievably it was from an entertainment perspective to see all of these American outlets of like varying levels of legitimacy report on this news after our report came out, and then Pro Football Talk picked up on it, because especially after Pro Football Talk picks up on it, everybody's picking up on it. And I saw people reporting that Chase Claypool is going to the CFL, and it's like, no, that's not what this means. He's just been added to a negotiation list. And my favorite tweet to one of these, so you know, a publication puts out a tweet, something Chase Claypool CFL. My favorite tweet was a reply from somebody who I assume is American, which said, "Better hope you speak French, kid." Which I legitimately burst out laughing. My wife thought I was crazy, because it's like, yeah, first of all, this already Canadian player, because I don't think most NFL fans know that Chase Claypool is Canadian. It's like, he's already Canadian. Secondly, oh yeah, you gotta, how will you ever manage in Regina, Saskatchewan without being fully fluent in French? Like, don't get me wrong, I'm sure there's French speakers in Regina. That's great. But I got by in Regina at Grey Cup just knowing English. So I think Chase Claypool could do the same. So anyways, that was the most entertaining thing for me to come out of this, was people who obviously have never covered the CFL before, don't understand what a negotiation list is, don't understand what it means, trying to get the wording correctly, trying to figure that out. And I will also say, as someone who's in the media, and you boys, I think, would experience this as well, we've all had to do this, right? We've all had to report on something that is a little bit outside of our wheelhouse of something that we typically do. And you've got to dot your I's and you got to cross your T's and you got to maybe get in touch with friends you have in the media going, hey, is this accurate? I know when we have to do political stuff, which is every now and again, I have a good friend of mine who's in politics who I reach out to. When we have a legal thing, I reach out to my legal friend who's a lawyer, right? We have to do that type of sourcing. Evidently, some of these folks don't have those CFL connections. So next time you got a question, just DM 3Down Nation. We'll set you right. And we'll also make sure that if you ever go to Regina, we'll hook you up with a French dictionary.
Man, with all due respect, though, to our American viewers, listeners, and readers, I just hope that not everybody down there thinks that we live in the North Pole and build snow houses and still go out and hunt for our food every day in the bush. Like, this is not a country that is far away from you. We're right next door. Like, how do you not know these things? You think everybody in this country is bilingual, or that you have to speak French to get by? All due respect to those people that are bilingual. That's amazing. I wish I could be like that. But some of those comments, you know, I just don't understand where they come from.
I'll jump in really quick with, because I was the one who broke the story a couple years ago that Shaquille Griffin, the one-handed cornerback, formerly the Seattle Seahawks, had been added to the neg list by the Hamilton Tiger Cats. And he very quickly quote tweeted the report saying it was not true. And I then DM'd with him, and he was very kind and respectful in the DMs. It was great communicating with him there. But I had egg on my face, because obviously I'm getting like barraged with comments, people being like, see, this is wrong. This is, he's not, it's like, that's not what this means. It does not. I'm not saying that he has signed with the Ticats. I'm saying they've added him to the exclusive negotiation list. So if he were to come to the CFL, they would hold his exclusive rights. Now, he did also say in the DMs that he wouldn't consider coming to Canada because it was too far. Now, he's living in Florida and played in the NFL in Seattle. And when I told him that actually Hamilton was closer to Florida than Seattle, I don't think he believed me, which is fine. I know that in America, they don't learn a lot about Canada, whereas in Canada in school, we do learn a lot about the United States. But the point is, yeah, that was the most entertaining part for me coming from this news is, I don't know, it was like, it was wild. It was fun.
It's always amusing to see Americans deal with any news that is CFL related, particularly when it involves a notable name. But to me, the part of this story that is being overlooked, the fact that Chase Claypool's never coming to the CFL. I'd put the chances of that at less than 1%. I think this is a situation of fake news becoming reality. And as you alluded to, Dunk, sometimes teams will take one spot on that neg list, temporarily and use it to elevate their brand or to get some marketing work done. And I think that's exactly what happened here. This Twitter account, which was not a reputable news source, is some, you know, half news aggregator, half meme account, came up with a story that there was a competing bidding war for Claypool's services between the BC Lions and Saskatchewan Roughriders. This was not true at the time. It's not true now. Nobody from the Riders has reached out to Claypool at this stage. And they saw that. They saw the traction that it was getting online and thought, hey, this is not a bad idea to take a throwaway spot to get our name out there and to generate some attention, because he was placed on the neg list several days after that initial tweet came out. If you look at Claypool's career, and the trajectory it's gone on, it's got worse every season. He struggled late in his career in Pittsburgh. He struggled in Chicago. He struggled in Miami last year. He's not focused. He's not dedicated right now. I wish him the best. I think there's still a little bit of NFL interest. Hopefully he can resurrect his career down south. But if you're a guy who can't motivate yourself for millions of dollars and doesn't appear to love the game that much, you are not going to come up here for what, $150,000 Canadian dollars and motivate yourself to do the same thing and put in the same level of work, because that's what's required to play in the CFL. You've got to love it, and you've got to love it for a lot less money. Chase Claypool does not appear to do that. And frankly, if his NFL opportunities dry up, I'm sure there's going to be opportunities for him in business or fashion or gaming or all the other things that he does off the field that will be far more lucrative and will fill his well up far more than coming up to Canada to play for peanuts.
He's earned over $8 million to date in his NFL career, fellas. That's USD, obviously. And if he's been smart with it, hopefully he's invested it or saved it, who knows what, but that money should last him for the rest of his life, and you wouldn't have to put your body on the line. I think that's the other part of the factor of this, is when we talk about some of these name NFL players, and yes, Claypool's Canadian, but he also has a big name in the States because of what he did with the Steelers in that rookie season. 10 touchdowns in his first 10 games, fellas. That's almost unheard of. He was being put in the mix just from a statistical standpoint with the likes of a Randy Moss, and was being talked about as this next great receiver, elite in the NFL. He obviously has not gotten back to those kinds of numbers for various reasons, but this guy is a name player. So when we're talking about these name players being put on the negotiation list and fans start to get excited north of the border, you have to look at how much they've made and then weighing that against, you know, except for quarterbacks, making maximum, let's say, a couple hundred thousand or $300,000, which is Geno Lewis territory these days, to put your body through that when you already have millions of dollars in the bank probably doesn't make sense when you could have some of these other off-field opportunities. It's a really intriguing story. It definitely created a lot of buzz. Full credit to Mike Florio at Pro Football Talk for linking to our article. He's done that through the years for a number of similar stories like this. And for the uninitiated, Lamar Jackson has been on a CFL negotiation list before. Russell Wilson has been on a negotiation list before. Tim Tebow, you can go on down the line of big name players that were on negotiation lists, but I think JC pegged it well. It's probably less than 1% chance that Claypool or some of these other bigger names ever come up here, but in the case of a Johnny Manziel, or when they do, it creates a lot of news and is obviously very interesting to see how they do a la Chad Johnson with the Montreal Alouettes.
And for that $8 million dunk, just think, he could buy like a modest house in Vancouver. That is, that's a lot of money, right? That's a lot of money. $8 million USD. That he could even go grocery shopping after buying that house. That's a lot. So 100%.
Only once, kudos to him.
Just once. He'd have to get the name brand or the store brand after that. But he could go name brand grocery shopping one time with what's left over from buying that house. So
I'd like you to tell your boy Griffin there, Hodge, that Vancouver is, what, like 3-4 hour drive from Seattle? How close is it?
It's three hours. It's 3 hours. About there.
About three and a half. It's been a while.
Like, it's not that far away. Again, Mr. Griffin, it's not like you're going to the North Pole, my man.
No.
But anyways, JC, you got anything else left?
Nah, I'm good on this. Let's move on.
Legendary Saskatchewan Roughriders president and CEO Jim Hopson passed away on Tuesday at the age of 73 after a three-year battle with colon cancer. Actually, we should make that Wednesday. How will you remember the Canadian Football Hall of Famer?
Well, the news came out on Wednesday. He passed away on Tuesday. I'm not sure what time he passed away on Tuesday. It's possible it was late evening. But regardless, I mean, this is a huge loss. It's not one that was, I think, unanticipated, of course. We knew for several years now that Jim was battling a very serious illness. I believe it was diagnosed as stage four. But regardless, I mean, Jim Hopson is a hero. Like, as far as I'm concerned, that word might sound a little bit hyperbolic, but, you know, before his tenure started as the first CEO and president full-time, at least in Saskatchewan Roughriders history, the Riders were an afterthought, right? The Riders were hosting telethons to keep the lights on. They were a perennial laughingstock when it came to a football perspective, and the team was nothing but, you know, you go to the old busted down stadium and, you know, you'd buy a beer and you'd watch your team lose. And then you go home and you go, well, thank goodness Saskatchewan is a football team. And Jim was kind of the first one to come along and say, what if we were the best team in the CFL? And what if we were a marketing juggernaut? And what if we achieved new financial and economic highs never before thought possible? And he did it. Like, he literally did it. Like he came up with a crazy idea that no one else, at least to my knowledge at that point, had ever envisioned being a possibility. And within a few years, it became a reality. Like, I can remember, as, you know, then a teenager on the prairies, like seeing rider gear in and around Manitoba. And it was from people who generally had family in Saskatchewan or were born in Saskatchewan and had moved or whatever. And this sense of rider pride, this sense of what Rider Nation was, suddenly was a brand new entity. And what that created was a massive windfall on the field as well. Obviously, this team only won two Grey Cups in close to 100 years before Jim Hopson became the CEO and president of the team. And then they won two in just his decade-long tenure, and they've obviously been close to winning more than that. And, of course, arguably the best facility in the CFL in New Mosaic Stadium would not exist if it were not for the foundation that Jim Hopson had laid. So Jim Hopson, to me, thank goodness he got in the Hall of Fame while he was still with us, while he was still healthy in 2019. I commend the Riders for naming their auditorium at New Mosaic Stadium, naming it after him. It sucks, right, when people pass before maybe knowing how special and appreciated they were. I don't think that's the case with Jim. I think he knew exactly how much Rider Nation loved him, how much the team loved him, how much the province loved him. And by all accounts, though I did not know Jim personally, from all the quotes that I've read, videos I've watched, whatever, it certainly seems to have been mutual. Obviously, this is a man who not only played for the team, because he played for the Riders for 4 years along the offensive line with George Reed and Ron Lancaster during that incredible run in the 70s, but he obviously had tremendous pride for the place where he came from, and obviously he'll be very much missed by the folks in Saskatchewan.
Yeah. When you talk about from a business and marketing perspective, I think Jim Hopson is arguably, I maybe don't even say arguably, the best figure in that area in CFL history. I can't think of another person who has had the same level of impact or the same level of innovation as he did. We often come on this podcast, boys, and discuss the league's business model and ways to tweak it and bemoan the fact that the league doesn't do enough. Well, Jim Hopson did enough, and he built this brand, the Saskatchewan Roughriders, into what it is today, because as you illustrated, Hodge, it was not that before. There was always a passionate fan presence in Saskatchewan. There's not a lot else going on in Regina, but he made it from a laughingstock into a dynasty, into something that is on par with sports leagues all across the world. You can go to any event and see Rider gear because of Jim Hopson. And he will be sorely missed, not only in the province of Saskatchewan, but across the CFL. And I hope his passing inspires a new generation of people to reach for the stars in the CFL as he did, and have that effect on other franchises and build this league up like he built up the Rough Riders, because we desperately need it.
Jim Hobson created the expectations in Ryderville to win and also to be profitable. And I think the main reason he did that was bringing together a province and, dare I say, Rider Nation to be proud of having that team there. Yes, it's really the only upper tier, I guess we'll call it.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Call it professional league there. I know the National Lacrosse League is in Saskatoon with the Rush, but the Riders have been around for a long time. And even though their brand is so strong these days, I think a lot of people forget, maybe outside of Saskatchewan, that as Hodge mentioned, they used to have telethons just to keep the team alive. But Hobson created the expectation for sellouts at Old Mosaic Stadium and New Mosaic Stadium, to the point where, you know, I can recall being at games the last couple of years at Mosaic Stadium, and people are saying, it's, you know, not quite full, or it's, you know, one of the smaller crowds that they've had in a while. Like, that didn't used to be the case. And it also didn't used to be the case where this team had the expectations as an organization. I'm not talking about from a football standpoint, but as an organization and the fans, to be one that could be a contender from year to year, or at least was going to make their damn best effort to do so. And you can see that in the Grey Cups that the team won in 2007 and in 2013 at home on their home turf. That Grey Cup will never be forgotten in Rider Nation lore. And I think it's been a bit of a breeding ground. We've seen Craig Reynolds succeed Hobson in that role, and the team has been pretty good on the field in recent years, even though people would say, Craig Dickinson should have been gone a year earlier. Well, in 2019 and 2021, he went to the West Final. 2019, they were first in the West. And I think largely, if you look at this legacy that Hobson has left, I would view it as resetting the expectations in Rider Nation and bringing together those green and white fans to create something that's really special. And you guys have touched on this. You can go around the world. Like, Corey Mace goes on vacation after being named the head coach of this team, some sunny destination down south, and sees Rough Rider fans in green. Like, it's unbelievable how strong this brand has become after Jim Hobson was there.
Well, and even something like the Watermelons, right? Like, the Watermelons did not precede Jim Hobson. And in fact, I think I've seen it reported that that was his kind of thought process. Like, that was his original idea, was like, what if we got Rider fans to put watermelons on their heads? And I can only imagine the looks he would have received when he proposed that for the first time. Like, literally, what are you talking about, Jim? We're just trying to sell some tickets. And he's like, no, what if we created an unbelievably cool and different and unique thing, like putting watermelons on your heads to support the Riders? And lo and behold, again, for an idea that probably sounded ridiculous at the start, it became an absolute iconic thing that we now take for granted. Like, oh yeah, like when you use an emoji on social media to represent the Riders, you put a watermelon, right? You see every game, there's people wearing watermelons on their heads, or they've got watermelon merch, right? There's unbelievable, right, things that we take for granted now, 20 years after he joined the
BC Lions, have a game named after it, right? The Watermelon Smash.
The Watermelon Smash, which is another separate brilliant piece of marketing that stemmed from the original idea, right, from Jim Hobson. So, again, I think it's incredible what he achieved, and I think we need more big thinkers, more visionaries like Jim Hobson, in all facets of our society, right? Yes, not every idea is going to pay off in spades. But when it comes to marketing, when it comes to politics, when it comes to anything, having people who are not afraid to take a really, really big swing, I think is a positive thing. And good for Jim, because of all the swings he took, a lot of them were home runs. JC, you attended the University of British Columbia's recent Pro Day, starring offensive lineman Giovanni Manu and Theo Benedict. Which player impressed you the most, and do you think either or both could be selected by NFL teams in the draft later this month?
Well, let's start off with the second part of your question, because I think there is a realistic possibility that both could get drafted, and I think it's a foregone conclusion that both sign NFL contracts at the end of this NFL draft cycle. Both are incredibly impressive athletes, and the scouts in attendance, all 16 teams. There was also, you know, the offensive coordinator of the Indianapolis Colts, Jim Bob Cougar, who made the trip up from the University of Washington Pro Day, another Dallas Cowboys tight ends coach. Like, there were some bigger names that made the trip that don't typically attend a Canadian Pro Day when they happen every other year or every 3 years to check out these guys. And universally, they all agreed that they are NFL caliber players, right? They may be on that fringe of drafted or undrafted, but they are people that these scouts are going to be in draft meetings pounding the table for, saying, hey, instead of taking the guy that's got a spotty college career at a college we recognize, let's go out and take a shot at these kids from UBC who have insane measurables, because they do. They are special, special athletes. You talk about Theo Benedict, 6'7", 295 pounds, should be noted. He was a little bit down on his weight. He had battled illness the week before. He was also running on a bad ankle, but a 34.5-inch vertical. That is simply ridiculous as an offensive lineman. And, you know, a 1.77 10-yard split with a 5'1", 440, that's really impressive. And then you look at Giovanni Manu, who I would argue is not as good a player right now as Theo Benedict, but then you watch him run, and he's 6'7", 352 pounds, gentlemen, and he runs an official 5.03-second 40-yard dash. Are you kidding me? I was standing in the line directly with all the scouts as this happened. There are some people who clocked him as low as 4.96 at 352 pounds. That is absolutely absurd. Oh, and he gets up 33.5 inches in the vertical, and they stopped him because they were only allowed two jumps. I think he could have gone even higher. This guy is an absolute freak, and whether you like one or the other is going to come down entirely to your philosophy as an NFL team, whether you're a gap scheme guy or a zone scheme guy, whether you want the more polished prospect or you fall in love with the pure measurables of a guy who's bigger than almost anybody at the NFL Combine and runs faster than any offensive lineman there. That is what you have in these two prospects right now.
My most pressing question, fellas. Manu or Manu?
I say Manu. JC says Manu, but we should probably ask to confirm.
Yes, that's fair.
I'm pretty sure it's Manu. I could be wrong.
You've called his games before. You're the one who should
know. You should be the expert.
Yeah,
here.
I'm just taking it easy on Hodge. That's all. You're outvoted
that's
here.
That's fine.
Hodge, okay. When you say Manu, it makes me think of like manure. I don't know why. This guy's like the farthest thing from manure.
You're going to feel really bad for saying that if it ends up being Manu. Just saying. Just saying. You're going to feel really bad.
I'll go with Manu, and I'll say about both these guys, his good buddy there, Benedette, that yes, it was great that there was a bunch of pro scouts coming up to Canada, and one of the most legendary coaching names in NFL history, Jim Bob Cooter, came all the way from the deep south, or I guess more middle of the USA, to see this. Was freaking awesome. But there were NFL teams coming to campus during the season to watch these guys live. It has become, I would say, more of a regular thing for NFL teams to make the trip across the border to attend these pro days. JC, I remember you were asking me about Anthony Auclair's pro day at Laval and David Onyemata's and Jeff Gray's at Manitoba and Laurent Duvernay-Tardif's at McGill in the past. Those guys all had a solid amount of teams come out to their pro days, but I cannot remember a double-digit amount of teams ever, and this is only in my time really covering Canadian football, coming across the border during the season to see prospects, watch them up close and personal, and check out their games. And I believe, if I have my numbers correct, I'd have to go back and check my reporting from the fall, but that there was a double-digit amount of teams that came through the University of British Columbia during the season to see these guys up close and personal. And I think there was a couple teams that came through multiple times. So some of these teams that are coming to see them at the pro day are not seeing them in person for the first time. To me, that might be the most impressive thing about these guys. The physical and measurable traits are unbelievable. And I do think that there is a really good chance both of these get drafted based on their measurables, their pedigree, the fact that Benedet has been to the East-West Shrine Game, and also the fact that a guy like Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, who got picked by the Kansas City Chiefs, was able to go down there and have such a productive career and win a Super Bowl with Patrick Mahomes bodes well and gives these talent evaluators south of the border more confidence, I should say, that Benedet and Manu can make the transition to the NFL game.
I should just message Giovanni right now and ask him how to say his name, because that's going to bug me. But something that will blow your mind. You guys talked about how explosive these numbers are, how good these testing numbers are. This is perspective. At the NFL Combine this year, I'm not going to compare them to the offensive linemen because they tested very favorably to the offensive linemen. Both players at UBC, Benedet and Manu, tested higher in the vertical jump than one receiver, and they both tested higher than six defensive backs. And Benedet, the number's higher because his jump was even higher. So these guys as 300-pound offensive linemen, and Manu, 352. Like, to do that at three, like, he would have been the heaviest or second heaviest offensive lineman, third heaviest player at the NFL Combine. This guy is out jumping, like, albeit, yeah, near guys testing near the bottom, but he's out leaping receivers and DBs. Like, that is unbelievable.
Like 150 pounds
or more. Yes.
More.
The shortest jump at the NFL Combine by a receiver was by a guy named Jaquan Jackson, who is out of Tulane, and at 5'9" and 188 pounds, essentially half of Manu's weight, he jumped 2 inches less, which is crazy. So the athleticism is off the charts. I will say, when it comes to the actual draft, we should note that no U Sports player has been drafted since 2016 when David Onyemata got picked. Though, of all the top U Sports prospects who have gone NFL over that time, right, you mentioned some of those names, Dunk, Jeff Gray did it in 2017, Carter O'Donnell did it, albeit without a pro day due to COVID in 2020 out of the University of Alberta, there have been some others. With the number of NFL scouts that were there, 17, that seems like a pretty magic number, or teams, I should say, that were there, 17 teams, that seems like a pretty magic number to get drafted, because when you get to round six, you get to round seven, there's not going to be very many, if any, prospects who have this combination of size and athleticism. Last thing I will say, Jim Bob Cooter, quick fact check, is from Fayetteville, Tennessee. And that's probably right on the border, because if you live north of Tennessee and you try to name your son Jim Bob Cooter, they'd probably send the birth certificate back. Like, no, you can't do this. You got to be east of Texas and you got to be south of Ohio. You can't do it in any other part of the country. There's no Jim Bob Cooters in Maine or Arizona or Washington State. There's just Cooters in the southern U.S. Jim Bob Cooter. That is the best name ever uttered on this podcast, dare I say.
I will say this. He also introduces himself by his full name. He doesn't just go, hey, I'm Jim Bob. He goes, I'm Jim Bob Cougar, which if my name was Jim Bob Cougar, I would always utter my full name when introducing myself. To your point, Hodge, about the level of scouts and the interest, both of these players after this pro day had sit-down dinners with multiple teams or meetings with multiple teams. I've heard that Theo Benedet is going to have at least one top 30 visit with an NFL club where they fly you down, they interview you, they get to meet with the coaching staff. That's a really good indication that a team is invested in potentially taking you in the draft, as we're seeing right now with guys like Quantes Stiggers from the Toronto Argonauts and the level of interest he has with all his top 30 visits. This is for real. And if two U Sports prospects from the same team get drafted in the same year, I don't know that that has ever happened before in the history of Canadian football. Somebody has to fact check that. I haven't done my research thoroughly, but it seems like something that would certainly be unique. It hasn't happened in a very long time, if it's ever happened at all. These two players are just that special.
We'll have to check our list. We do have it going back, I think, all of the Canadians who have been selected in the NFL draft, at least in the Super Bowl era. And I can't recall. I mean, Dwayne Ford would maybe be the other guy, but he's helped us out with that list and might have an idea. But I don't think that's happened before, JC. That's a good number.
There are also lots of, like, top NCAA programs that don't produce two drafted players every year. Like, it would be wild to look if both got drafted, which, again, I think is still a big if. And by the way, I do agree with JC's sentiment. I think that Benedict is the better player right now. I think Manu has the higher ceiling, however, long term. But it would be wild if they both got drafted to then look and compare and see some of the top, like, Power 5 NCAA programs that had zero or one draft picks in 2024, because inevitably there will be some schools like that.
Top 2024 CFL draft prospects, Nick Mardner, Malik Straker, and Kyle Hergel all held pro days this past week with mixed results. Which player improved their stock the most and which player maybe dropped on the board?
Well, I think the player who probably rose the most was Kyle Hergel. I think a lot of people were expecting him to do some amazing things. Going into his senior year, he made Bruce Feldman's Freaks List, which is an annual list that comes out in August of college athletes who could do freaky things, as having a 34-inch vertical. He did jump slightly less than that at the Boston College Pro Day, but at 6'3", 302, he verted 33 inches, which, by the way, is still higher than Jaquan Jackson out of Tulane, the same receiver who apparently I'm just hating on today, because I still got that up in front of me from the NFL Combine. But the point is, Kyle Hergel, I mean, he's a five-year starter. He has excelled at every step of this process. He started off at the FCS level at North Dakota, where he was a teammate, by the way, of current Winnipeg Blue Bombers Brady Oliveira and Evan Holm, who was an all-star at halfback this past season. He transferred to Texas State, where, again, he was two-time all-conference as a teammate of Liam Dobson, who he's still very good friends with, guy who's probably going to be a starter at guard for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers this season. And then he transferred to finish at Boston College. And he's a little bit older. He's 24, but a lot of prospects at this juncture with the added year from COVID are a little bit older than most years. Certainly, I think he's going to get an NFL shot at center. The question is, how long does he stick? But he, to me, did everything he needed to do. He did 30 on the bench. I've since talked to him, because if you watch the video of him doing the bench, it's clear he probably could have done more. He simply decided to stop there at 30 because that was his goal. But when I asked him, how many could you have done? He said, I probably could have done 35 to 37, but I'm just kind of saving my shoulders and going from there. So he put up a monster number. He could have put up an even bigger number. The player who I think was disappointing out of the ones that you mentioned was linebacker Malik Straker out of Arkansas State. He is a true tweener, a linebacker DB hybrid. If you were to compare him to some current CFL guys, he's a little smaller than Adam O'Clair, who's kind of found a home at Will. He's about the same size as Reda Cramdy, the strong side linebacker in Winnipeg out of the Université de Montréal-Carabin. That's as good as my French gets, which is why I'll never go back to Regina. Don't want to run into that language barrier. But Straker at 5'10", 202, only ran a 4.82. That's really going to hurt his chances of playing safety at the CFL level. And his change of direction scores in the three cone and the shuttle were also worse than just about every linebacker who attended the CFL Combine. His other testing was great. He put up 21 on the bench, which is fantastic. His 10-foot, 5-inch broad jump, fantastic. 33.5-inch vert, solid. It was also better than Jaquan Jackson out of Tulane from the NFL Combine.
Jaquan Jackson's going to come to the CFL, score a touchdown, I hope find he does. You in the press box, Hodge, and fire that ball
I hope
face.
He does. I actually, that'd be amazing if Jaquan Jackson was the next, like, Kenny Lawler. That'd be incredible. But the point is, Malik Straker, I think teams were expecting him to test better. He was an absolute monster on defense with the Red Wolves for 3 years. It should be stated his production is off the charts. The question is, does the athleticism impress scouts enough to say, yeah, that's going to translate to the CFL level, no problem? Or are they going to say, hold on, is it possible that this guy is a great, great college player who's maybe going to struggle to transition to the professional level? I'm curious to see how that plays out.
I think it hurts Straker a little bit as well, Hodge, that the last guy who played a similar role to come to the CFL, who also, I believe, if I'm remembering correctly, underwhelmed a little bit at his pro day, Enoch Mokonzo, hasn't fully panned out, right? That's sort of the similar type of guy in that they play what they often call the rover position in American college football, but is essentially a Sam linebacker. That's their projection to the next level. And Mokonzo, who I was really high on coming out in that year's draft and went fourth overall, and Edmonton had big plans for him, hasn't really looked like the same player. And here you have Malik Straker, who potentially projects to a similar role, testing like this. You begin to wonder, could there be a similar path? Hurgel, he's in another category unto himself. I think it's a travesty if he doesn't stick in the NFL personally, because he is that good as a player. I have him above Theo Benedet in my offensive line rankings and just below Isaiah Adams, who's going to be a day two pick. He's an exceptional player. So I won't beat that drum too much, but I will touch on Nick Mardner, who for me, I know there's been some different reporting on the numbers. Draft Scout has slightly different numbers than what, Hodge, you put out there. But to me, they were just a little bit underwhelming. I mean, he's 6'6", a true 6'6". I don't know that we've ever seen it in the CFL, but the numbers I've seen indicate he ran 4.6-ish in the 40. That's not overly fast. And his change of direction numbers weren't very good either, much like Malik Straker. I still like him as a prospect, but with some of the questions he's had over the last 2 years, not producing very much, bouncing from school to school since he left Hawaii, I think that completely takes him out of the running for the NFL. He's going to be a guy who goes in the first round of the CFL draft, but I think may take a couple years to adjust. I comp him to Justin McInnes, who had similar measurables coming out, was 2 inches shorter at Arkansas State, but had a little bit longer arms to compensate for that. He's turned into a really good player for the BC Lions, but it took him some time to get there. Nick Mardner might be the type of guy who's like that, that people have high expectations for coming in year one as a rookie and actually doesn't start producing at that level until year three or year four.
Mardner, I think, has the upside to be a potential beast in the slot in the CFL. And you talk about questions about bouncing from school to school or football team to football team. And I think of Rashawn Simon, is a guy that, you know, did not come through in terms of what people thought he could be, but ended up being, I believe it was a second round draft pick, right, Hodge?
That's correct. Yep.
In that draft. And a lot of that was just due to the athletic potential. I think Mardner has that, plus that big frame. You give him the waggle at 6'6" with, you know, overall pretty good speed. And I think what that 40 range was in the 4.5, 4.6 range, fellas, even though it was varying.
The numbers that we reported, just to be perfectly clear, we reported 4.46 40, which I had a source who was there tell me was the average. Now the school later put out a 4.52 time. Draft Scout has since posted 4.60. So you take that for what it's worth. These pro days, it's hard to label these super official. A little different in like the vertical jump, the broad, and the bench press, which obviously are really easy to quantify. The three that are trickier are the speed and quickness drills. But suffice to say, at best, he is a high 4.4 guy. And I think at worst, he is a 4.6 guy. So I'd put him right there with Justin McInnes, who was also kind of a, well, I think McInnes was a little slower. I think he was in the higher 4.6s.
McInnes ran 4.61 via Draft Scout.
Okay.
So almost identical times.
By the way, I
I think probably McInnis was a little faster though from the times that we had, if I remember right.
I was just gonna say, as a fun little experiment, I went back and I took stock of a whole bunch. Let's take a little break here. Let's play a little game. I took stock of official times of current CFL or like recent history CFL receivers and plunked them all into a database. So I'm going to say a player. We'll have JC go first, and then Dunk, you can go second for guessing what they ran. And by the way, these are all official NFL combine numbers, not CFL, NFL combine numbers. So we'll start off Dillon Mitchell, current star with the Edmonton Elks. JC, what do you think he ran?
Oh God. I'm terrible at judging speeds. 4.58.
Dunk.
I'll go 4.52.
Around 4.46. He is faster than either of you guys think. Chad Owens. This is back to 2005, but he did test at the combine in the NFL level. JC, what do you think Chad Owens ran?
He was fast on the field. Let's go 4.46.
Dunk.
I'm going 4.61. I don't think he was a great
Dunk tester. Is like almost bang on. He ran 4.62, which by the way is slower than Nick Mardner at 6'6". Crazy that Chad Owens apparently had worse straight line speed coming out than Nick Mardner. Here's an interesting one. Demonte Coxey, current star for the Toronto Argonauts. JC.
Oh, we were talking about this.
I think he's, you know, this one.
I don't know it spot on, but he's in the 4.6s, isn't he? Let's go 4.66.
Dunk.
That was my initial thought, but something makes me think that he maybe just slipped into the 4.5, so go 4.59.
At the NFL Combine, Demonte Coxey ran 4.77, which is awful. And yet, he's finding a way to get behind CFL defenses. We'll do one more round, but we could bring this game back next week if people like it. Adarius Bowman, NFL Combine in 2008. Let's let Dunk go first this time. Dunk, give us a time for Adarius Bowman out of Oklahoma State.
This one's tricky because he's a long strider. Honestly, my first thought is somewhere in the 4.8 range, but then I'm like, no, that can't be possible. I'll say 4.78.
I'm gonna go. I was also thinking 4.8 range because of the way he played, and I saw a twitch in Hodge's eyeball. I'm watching you when you said 4.8, so I'm gonna go 4.82 as his number.
The answer is 4.74. So the twitch in my eye was misread by you, my friend. But the point is, it's really interesting to go back and look at some of these numbers because some of these numbers are insanely impressive for guys who maybe didn't produce like crazy in the CFL. And some of them, frankly, are bad. And then guys come up to the CFL and do like incredible things. Mm-hmm. So anyway, let's use that as a barometer when we're talking about these prospects. And by the way, a player who I think is the best receiver in the CFL right now, Kenny Lawler, ran 4.64. So we're talking about a guy who, in Nick Mardner, who probably runs the same speed as Kenny Lawler. Is Kenny Lawler a burner? No, but he's a pretty darn good receiver if you watch him on the field.
He's definitely a guy that can get vertical in a hurry. I just want to add quickly here, that game is a reminder to people as we're going through draft season, you know, both in the NFL and the CFL, that it's still about playing football. So even though scouts are out here saying, I don't know if he runs quite fast enough or if he jumps in this vertical jump where you stand in one spot from a static position and jump as high as you can. And yeah, don't get me wrong. It's great to have those athletic abilities, but it's still about playing football. Guys, I'll throw this to you. You know, last year, I think he went a lot higher than we all projected because his athletic numbers weren't quite there. Lake Corte Moore was a guy that I think even you fellas liked but didn't feel like he would go that high in the CFL draft. So we got to be careful of some of these smoke screens as well.
We got to love the smoke screens. Absolutely. On that note, it's time for Hodge's Heritage Moment. On this day in 2005, Frank Clair passed away at the age of 87. The Ohio native was most remembered for his stint as the head coach of the Ottawa Rough Riders from 1956 to 1969, though he also coached the Toronto Argonauts to Grey Cup titles in 1950 and 1952. Clair posted a 116-75-5 record in Ottawa, leading the team to 14 consecutive postseason appearances. The Rough Riders won the Grey Cup three times with Clair as the head coach and twice after he became the general manager in 1970. A statue of Frank Clair was built outside of TD Place in 2014, a stadium that bore his name for over 20 years. Dunk, you're the old man of this podcast. What do you remember about Frank Clair?
Man, honestly, I just remember playing in that stadium as a youngster at the, I think it's what called the Football Canada Cup for Team Ontario, and understanding the history that was there. It was called Frank Clair Stadium at the time, and getting to play in a pro stadium was pretty cool. You know, I think that the Rough Riders should, I can't believe I just called them Rough Riders, but I guess you said it. The Red Blacks should try to either bring him back from the dead or find somebody in his family to coach their football team, because the Red Blacks would dearly love to get back in the postseason.
Ooh, hot take. Oof.
Maybe are you saying they should be calling plays with a Ouija board? Like, what are you saying?
No, I'm just saying he went to the postseason 14 times in a row.
That is true.
Like, that's the Red Blacks are trying to just get in there, you know, one time under this current regime.
Okay. Obviously, yes, he had a pretty tremendous run. On that note, it's time for the three-minute drill.
Canadian receiver Samuel Emilis signed a contract extension with the Saskatchewan Roughriders through 2025. Is that a big deal?
It is. It's a huge deal for the Riders. Emilis is a heck of a player. And I will also say this. I love this recent trend with guys like him, Marc-Antoine Dacroix, Tyson Philpott, of signing extensions before their rookie deals are up. It gets more money into the players' pockets, and also it gives fans an opportunity to actually connect with these players, buy jerseys. I love that we're in a new era of the CFL where players aren't switching teams every single year. The Calgary Stampeders have signed linebacker Shahid Salmon following a stint in the USFL. Could he make an impact in Cowtown?
I don't think he's going to be in the mix to be a starting linebacker, but that team has desperately needed some special teams depth, some guys who can be core teamers for them. He's a guy who can do that based on his time in Ottawa. He's a hard hitter. He'll run downhill. Mark Killam is going to love to work with him. Defensive back Javion Elliott retired after one season with the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Are the Ticats going to miss him in the secondary?
Definitely, but they did go out and spend on Jamal Peters and are sort of tinkering with that secondary. Tunde Adeleke is obviously not back. Stavros Katsantonis is going to be at safety. And, you know, they do have some younger bodies, I think, that they like there. But Elliott was a guy that I felt like had some upside still to reach in the CFL, but he's gone on to his post-football life. Football Canada has hired Kevin McDonald as their interim managing director and will be tasked with helping guide the organization through a leadership restructuring. Is that a smart move?
It is. McDonald spent 20 years working for the CFL. He finished his tenure there as the vice president of football operations. And right now, Football Canada is going through a tumultuous time with that board and some of the pushback on some leadership changes. I think having a guy like Kevin McDonald to calm the waters a little bit is certainly in the best interest of everybody involved. The York University Lions have hired two-time Grey Cup champion and two-time Vanier Cup champion Greg Knox as their defensive coordinator. Is that a good hire?
I think it's a great hire. Greg Knox has a pedigree both as a head coach, as a player, and as a defensive mind. York is going to take a lot for York to be relevant again in the OUA, let's be frank. But I've liked some of the early moves that head coach Dexter Janke has come in and made. I've liked some of his player additions as well coming out of the CJFL ranks. Hopefully they're going to start trending in the right direction next season. Eight CFL players have received a firefighting scholarship through the CFL Players Association. Dunk, do you think you'd have what it takes to be a firefighter?
Bro, without question. How are you even putting a question mark at the end of that? Are you kidding me? The only thing that I would be terrible at, which is obviously a major part of this, is anytime I see blood, I pretty much pass out instantly.
So you don't have what it takes.
Somebody
come on,
on
now.
My crew
come on.
That knows that.
That's like half dude, the job.
No, it's not half the job. Most of it's fighting fires.
No,
and
it's not. They're the first responders to everything an ambulance goes to. Most of the
job. I know,
job
but I'll let
is
somebody else deal with those ones, and then I'll take the lead on the non-bloody calls. I'm
fire
saying
don't
this
bleed, JC. Fire don't bleed.
Yes, exactly.
But in all seriousness, Doug, I think you would also have serious problems with what those big old helmets would do to your hair.
Because
I know how you are when your hair is not perfectly on point. That would be a serious obstacle, my friend.
And if his eyebrows got singed off, he would never hear the end of it.
Nobody wants to see that. Three Down Nation contributor Santino Filosa released his picks for the Ottawa Red Blacks All-Decade Team. Are there any, though, that he got wrong?
All that matters is he got the right center, which is John Gott, my brother from another mother. I say because we have often said that, or it's often been said that we look very much alike. I used
to
get that
for one reason, though, because he chugged a beer.
No, I think it's because we just genuinely have a strong resemblance.
I mean that he got picked to the team.
Oh, no, he was like an all-star center, right? He was like an original Red Black. They traded for him, and he helped them win a Grey Cup. I think he was a legitimate. What do you think? He stunk?
No, I'm just saying.
Yeah,
we had to bring up the beer chugging somehow.
Oh, well, of course. And I will say that probably helped his iconicism in the nation's capital, but I think he was a good player regardless. Touchdown Pacific, this year's neutral site CFL game in Victoria, sold out in less than an hour. Did you manage to snag a ticket, JC?
Well, I don't need one because I'll be making the trip to go be in the press box for that game. But it's a fantastic sign that that game sold out so quickly. And just before the podcast, we started recording, they announced that they're expanding some of the party zone there. So there will be a few more tickets coming out. It should be a great event. Victoria's not a city that's going to be able to host a CFL team full time like they've wanted to do out in the Maritimes, but there is a love of football there. Some of the best high school teams in the province, some powerhouse junior teams. I'm glad that they're going to get this province's football team right in their city this season. The Edmonton Elks have signed over 20 potential ownership groups to non-disclosure agreements, board chairman Tom Richards told 630 CHED this week. Should fans feel encouraged by that amount of interest?
Absolutely. Over 20? Like, that's insane, boys. You know, people want to make fun of the CFL, and oftentimes it is the butt of jokes, but over 20 potential ownership groups in the Alberta capital? Are you kidding me? That is unbelievable. And I just wish that this board, before they ever made arguably one of the worst hires in CFL history in making Chris Preston the president there, would have had the foresight to understand that they needed to go private sooner. Because I think this is going to be a win all around. And the fact that you have over 20 interested groups, guys, could create, dare I say, a rare bidding war in the CFL, depending how well-funded some of these groups are and how legitimate, I should say, they are. But it is definitely an encouraging sign for the Edmonton Elks and the CFL as a whole.
Well, on behalf of Justin Dunk, JC Abbott, and myself, we thank you as always for listening to the Three Down Nation podcast. And with apologies to Jaquan Jackson, we will see you next week for another episode. Take care.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.